It's time for TWiNT This Week in Tech. Great panel here. John C. Dvorak, Roger Chang, Tim Stevens, Jason Snell. We're going to talk about what happened at Microsoft, what's happening at Twitter, and where Facebook's going. All of that and more coming up next on TWiNT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiNT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiNT This Week in Tech, episode 421, recorded September 1st, 2013. The Self-Driving Cat. This Week in Tech is brought to you by SumAll. Easily connect your data from Google, Twitter, YouTube, PayPal, Amazon, Facebook, and more to gain important insights instantly, all in one beautiful interface. Start using it absolutely free today at SumAll.com. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Visit Audible.com/TWiT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID Audible_com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files for you automatically and continually for only $59.99 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT, and you'll get two bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIT! It's the show that covers your week's tech news. John C. Dvorak is stuck in traffic, but as soon as he gets here, he'll join us. Meanwhile, got a great panel. Even without John, Roger Chang, my old buddy from Tech TV, is here. He's a producer at Revision 3's TechZilla, or Tech 3's RevisionZilla. Either one would be good. Host of East Meets West.
Co-host, yes.
Co-host with Mr. Merritt. What else are you doing? You're wearing a TARDIS.
I also do another show's Downloaded and Each Nation with Patrick Horn.
Yeah. I just bought the OLED TV that Samsung is shipping.
Yes.
And Robert Herron said he wants to come up and calibrate it. I'm going to have a calibration battle between Robert Herron and Scott Wilkinson. It'd be like a rap battle.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be very dark.
Yeah. They go back and forth. No, that's flesh
the
tone.
Room.
No, that's flesh tone. It will be dark. Also here, Jason Snell, editorial director at IDG, where he runs both Macworld and PC Worlds. Good to see you.
It's great to be back.
Cross-platform. You're still wearing a Pebble. I can't believe it. You haven't given up on that.
I haven't given up. It's comfy. Tell
you feel good about wearable technology.
It's got a ways to go, but it'll get there.
And the man, the myth, the legend, Tim Stevens, now at CNET. I'm so glad to hear CNET just hired you for tech and auto. Always an auto fan. Good to have you, Tim.
That's right. Thanks. I start on Tuesday. Looking
Yay.
Forward to it.
Oh, you haven't started yet.
That's right.
Are you going to write a column? What are you going to do?
We're still going to figure out exactly what the format is going to be, so I'll let you know soon enough.
So glad to have you back.
Thank you.
I guess we could start with wearable technology. Coming up, the IFA conference in Brazil, and the big kickoff will be September 4th. Samsung is having an event at which we always knew they would announce the Note 3, but now apparently a Samsung executive is saying, yes, we have a watch to show you, the Galaxy Gear watch. Does anybody know anything about the Gear?
Well, the pictures we've seen make it look gigantic. There were some pictures.
It looks kind of like a slave bracelet. Okay, yeah.
It does, yes. And they were shown on an unfortunately thin wrist, which makes it look like this giant clasp, you know, like handcuffs almost. It looks like it's pretty big. Hopefully it's just that's a very small wrist that they pictured on in those press photos. But it does look to be a pretty big thing. It's got, I think we've heard either 3 or 4 gigs of storage. It's going to have an OLED screen on it. It's going to be running Android, of course, and there'll be definitely a big health focus. But the question is how much functionality it'll have beyond the health focus. I mean, there's definitely a big opportunity for going after things like the Fitbit. But certainly it needs to be a little bit more than that, I think, to really be successful. So I'm definitely eager to see what Samsung announces when it comes to functionality here this week.
It's not going to have a flexible screen, according to Lee Young-hee, executive vice president of Samsung Mobile. She did confirm that they would show it, but it does not have a flexible screen. that kind of limits it. You can't have too big of a display if it's not flexible. You don't want an iPhone strapped to your wrist.
Or do you?
Or do you? Do you think this will be a standalone device, or will it require a Galaxy phone?
I'm hopeful that it'll be more standalone than not, but I don't think it'll have any kind of a wireless connection. I don't think it'll have a 3G modem in it or anything like that. So I'm guessing that it will have to tether to your smartphone in order to pull down data if you want to get, you know, any sort of web connection or do any Skyping or anything like that. I'd be very surprised if it had any kind of 3G connection within it. But hopefully it is a fairly independent device. You know, it'd be great if it had GPS in it so we could, you know, track your run or do that kind of thing without having to have your phone along too. But that's definitely one of the bigger questions that I have going into this week.
Yeah, and are we ready for people taking pictures like this and, you know, pointing at their wrist and talking into their wrist, like, or Dick is it going to do that? Or
wasn't Dick Tracy doing that back
Yeah, Dick Tracy did it, but that was a comic book, and I don't know if that really
you never know.
He was Dick Tracy wasn't real.
Well, and he had a great fedora back then.
Don't tell Roger that.
Well, they mentioned internet access, so I'm wondering if that actually they didn't really detail it, whether or not you actually need to tether it to a cell phone. Or it actually has built-in wireless, which would
like
be cool.
Like Google Glass. Google Glass doesn't do anything if you haven't tethered it to something.
Yeah, I would assume that it needs to be tethered to something for, you know, for its coolest functionality. The GigaOm report that I'm looking at here talks about 10-hour battery life, and nobody really knows what that means. It's just a leak that says 10 hours of battery life. What concerns me about this is if you have to charge it, even if it's every day, it becomes a lot less fun than if you, like, I do have a Pebble. I have to charge it once a week, and I think that's not unreasonable.
But partly because the Pebble doesn't do much.
Well, that's true, but it's also because it doesn't have a backlit display. It's got this It's a low power LCD display, which means it's not pretty like the Samsung phone will be. But I wonder how different people use their watches, and if people are willing to take it off every night and plug it in, and then, you know, or not.
Aren't all of these things just kind of preemptory strikes against Apple's iWatch or whatever? I mean, it's everybody saying let's get in the market quick before Apple owns it.
I like that though. I really love. I mean, Samsung has been knocked so many times for following Apple, and I think it's great that they're going to come out with something in front of Apple. I think that's fantastic. Now, what'll be interesting is if you remember when the iPad came out, all of those pre-announced slates from CES were like,
never mind.
Yeah. They reconceived those products. Right. It'll be interesting to see what happens after Apple does whatever it's going to do. But I love that Samsung's coming out first. That's great.
I'm a believer in wearable computing. I don't think the Google Glass is all that compelling. Yeah. I don't think a wristwatch is all that compelling, but I love the idea. In a way, to me, a smartphone is a wearable computer. You're wearing it. It's in your pocket. It's with you at all times. I'm not sure. You have to do something that much improves on what is already pretty good experience. You've got 1080p displays. You've got super fast processors. It's functional. It's compact. It doesn't look weird on your body, which both Google Glass and most of these wristwatches do. Even the Pebble is not exactly attractive. Well, you think it's attractive?
A lot of people wear watches that are of... You know, who am I to judge the fashion of the? But you're right. This is something that everybody knows is probably going to be a thing. But
how?
When
and how?
And it's not yet. I think we could come out and say that anything that comes out, even in the next year, is not going to be the solution to this.
You remember the crappy Casio calculator?
I had one of those.
I know
I
you all had
every
one
day.
And you had a little stylus.
Actually, I had the one that transformed into a robot. So you could take it.
That was pretty awesome.
So what I'm saying is, this is not a product until. The first thing that happened, are you wearing one? Oh my God. This is not a product. Somebody in our audience is actually wearing it. It's not a product until you don't want to shout nerd when you see it. Then it's a product. I mean, we don't care. We're all nerds, but talking about a real product to a real audience.
It needs to be innocuous enough that people can kind of put it on without being very self-conscious.
Or raising people's hackles. That's what Google Glass does. People see you wearing glass. They go, no pictures.
Well, Nike Fuel Band and things like that are much more successful in getting regular people to use them. Yes. And they don't call attention to themselves. Yeah. But
the
they
only
also,
reason those
you
succeed
don't stare at them either.
Is because of Livestrong. If Neil Armstrong. What is his name?
Lance Armstrong.
Tim Armstrong, the CEO of AOL. If Lance Armstrong hadn't popularized these ugly yellow rubber bands, and everybody was wearing them, I don't think these Fitbit Flexes or any of these other than the Fuel Band would have succeeded.
Well, I mean, bracelets have always been around. Yeah. I used to wear a Medic Alert bracelet. I mean, they're around.
Maybe that's what the Samsung is.
So what is in... Medic Alert, that's a good example. Yeah. What is in this watch or whatever it is that makes it incredibly valuable. It starts with physical stuff.
Right. I mean, sensors, think it makes sense. Doing things like what Fitbit and the Nike Fuel Band do so that it can say, this is how many steps you took and this is how far you walked and things like that. That's a start. Telling you the time is not bad. I love that the Pebble...
Telling you the time. What a concept.
Let's put that on the list, right?
Holy cow.
It tells, well, when people ask about the Pebble, I say, well, it does tell the time. So it does base functions of a watch.
By the way, so does the Nike Fuel Band. I was using it a little bit as a watch.
Yeah, but I do like having some glanceable information on my watch. You know, I like being able to see... Somebody sends me a text message, I can glance my wrist and see whether I need to bother answering. Or my wife sent me a text saying, you know, I'm going to go pick up the kids. And I'm like,
it's
okay.
Nice to be able to look at
I didn't
that.
Need to pull out the phone. I didn't need to respond. I just needed to get that. And so getting your push notification sent to your wrist so you don't have to pull out the phone. I mean, that's on one level, that is the height of laziness, right? It's like, oh, my phone is all the way down in my pocket. But, you know, there's something to that I don't want to wear a pocket watch.
When I wear the Pebble,
that's a significant investment to actually pull that out of your pocket if you've got a big phone like Samsung produces. And they do produce a lot of big phones. So, you know, that can actually be a significant investment. Anything that keeps me from having to take my phone out of my pocket and from having to kind of hunch over my phone and read information on it and to enter in my PIN code and everything else, I think that actually is a significant thing that these devices can do. But also, that they've got to do voice chat. I mean, it's got to have Google Hangouts built in there so you can do some video conferencing with people. And it should be, again, a pretty easy thing to do. And you should be able to do some Google Now stuff too. You should be able to get your flight information. You should be able to get directions somewhere, or at least get traffic warnings. You know, if it's getting late in the day and there's an accident or a jumper on the bridge or something like that, and traffic is screwed up, it'd be great to get some push identification like that going right to your watch.
We've actually been building the infrastructure for this for a while. Twitter, as an example, Google Now. A technology is about to emerge when all the pieces start to come together.
Right,
in this
Bluetooth,
low energy.
Yeah.
In fact, a number of phones, iPhones supported LE for a while, but a number of Android phones are now supporting it. That's going to be universal in
phones.
And
if you're Samsung and you've got the Galaxy, you know, Note and the Galaxy Mega, these gigantic devices, then maybe it even makes more sense because you can just leave that in whatever pocket.
Leave it in your man purse.
Well,
had Ant Plus support too, that'd be great. Ant Plus is used for a lot of wireless sensors for athletic training, heart rate monitors, cadence sensors on bikes, and that kind of thing. And that's
what's
that
what's the technology? What is it called?
It's called Ant Plus, A-N-T Plus. It's something that Sony handsets support, but almost no other Android devices do, and it gives you support for heart rate monitors and lots of other things. If that was built into this too, that'd be a really great advantage for anybody who's doing strength training or running or cycling. They want to track their metrics. That's something that, again, you can't really get through a lot of Android devices, and if it were in here, that'd be a big bonus.
Ant can support heart rate, speed, cadence, foot pods, power meters, activity monitors, calorimeters, body mass index. This is all the stuff, blood glucose. But you'd have to have the add-on, right? So you'd have to have an Ant-supported body blood glucose measure sensor that would then go into the watch.
Right, but that's the kind of thing that the Nike Fuel Band can't do and the Fitbit can't do because they're too simple. The devices are, you know, they don't have the power to kind of pull in that kind of information. But if you use an app like Strava, which tracks your cycling, or there's a lot of running apps, those will all pull in information from heart rate monitors or from cadence sensors or those sorts of things. But most smartphones can't connect to them, so you had to go out and buy special Bluetooth sensors, which are a lot more expensive than the Ant Plus ones. So again, if this could do that'd be great. I would probably go out and buy one myself if it does.
It seems to be that we're getting close. What else? I'd love it if maybe it would know my blood pressure would be useful.
Well, what if
could it do that? If it knew my heart rate, my blood pressure? I guess it could do that, right? Every once in a while, it'll get really tight and then really loose. Well,
I mean, couldn't they manufacture just a special undershirt that you just wear that has all the sensors?
Oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a $300 undershirt.
Like an astronaut.
Why not?
Are those sensors on your temples? I guess we'll get used to all of that stuff. But there's a crossover point, okay? Geeks will buy anything like the Pebble is a geek product that we'll buy because it's just a cool factor. And we as geeks see the future, but we're willing to invest in something that's not yet really usable. But then there's a crossover effect where at some point it becomes big enough when it has enough capabilities.
Right.
And it's not ugly enough that people really will say, oh, I need that. I would love that. I don't see that crossover happening yet.
Mm-mm. Not yet, no. But I think we're not far away from being at that point. And these sorts of products, getting them out in the market to try to figure out what people want and what people need and what people don't want from these devices. You know, go ahead and get something out there for the early adopters who will spend a lot of money to get these sorts of devices and play with them and get their feedback on what they're doing, find out what they like, what they don't like. And then they can come out with a product next year that's really great. And, you know, if indeed Apple doesn't get its iWatch out until next year, then that could give Samsung a pretty big head start. They'd have a year's worth of data that they could then go back to and design revision 2.0 of this thing, have a really great product next year.
Well, and Samsung's history is creating new products that have kind of they throw a lot of stuff against the wall to see what sticks, and they'll have like the Galaxy S4 has got like 8 wacky bits of software and hardware in it. And
really wacky.
Some of them are, really wacky. When I'm not
scrolling
watching the video.
Scrolling with your eyeballs.
Yeah, the eyeball stuff is so bizarre. But my point is, they get this product out there, they spend a year with it, they talk to the people who buy it, and they'll discover the one or two things that like people really love, and then they will have learned something. And I think that's how this is going to go.
I don't know.
Knowing is half the battle.
I mean, like, one of the questions I'm still thinking about is a wristwatch really the form factor people want?
Well, that's the question. Is it glasses? Is it wristwatch? Is it a fanny pack? Is it a tooth implant? Is it a removable tongue? Is it an ear? It looks like an ear, but is it really an ear? What is it?
A shoe phone.
New hair?
It could be a fingerless glove.
Smart hats, Leo.
Love that idea.
It's coming.
Who invented that?
That's me, yeah. That's
He's
mine.
The smart.
You know, did you trademark it?
Look back in time.
It's all
20 years from now, folks, you will say, Jason Snell was saying we'd be wearing them.
Smart hats, yeah. I mean, I look at Google Glass, and it's just, it seems, as long as we've got eyeballs in our heads, hanging something right in front of your eyeball seems like it's going to be pretty intrusive. The watch has been used for hundreds of years as something that's for glanceable information, so it's not a bad place. But short of hanging things off of our, like having a little mobile that lives in front of our face, there are limited places, estate on your body.
There's limited
for this
places,
stuff.
Yeah, that you can hang things from, although... If you look at, you go to your neighborhood piercing shop, you'll find there's many more places than you thought
you can,
there were
yes.
for implanting things. I don't know. I feel
back
like
to the smart hats now.
I feel like I don't feel like we've cracked it yet.
No, I mean, like, how long did it take for the smartphone to get where it's at? I mean, you know, back when it,
there was Symbian, and I had my Scion. I love my Scion 3A. That was the greatest thing ever. But it wasn't until 2007 in the iPhone that everybody went, oh, touch.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Everything else was just a miniature laptop or some sort of combination.
Right. Yeah, that's what the Scion was. It had a keyboard and screen. All right. Enough of this. We'll find out. We'll look at the gear. I'll probably buy one. What do you think it'll cost? $100? $5,000? What? Anywhere in between.
$399.
It'll be little less than a smartphone. You work for Samsung, sir. You seem to be nodding. He's confirming it. The guy in the back, you work at IDEO. I could tell. You look like a designer. He's confirming it's going to be something like that. Now he's hiding his head in shame. I'm sorry. I shouldn't really call out people in the audience. It's mean. Our show today brought to you by Sumall. Oh, my friend Dane Atkinson has done something very interesting. SUMALL.com. I want you to take a look at it. It lets you connect data from Google, from Twitter, from YouTube, from PayPal. Actually, they're adding new inputs all the time. Facebook, to get insights into what you're doing. And they're this has been another insane month for them. 20% growth this month, or actually last month. 60,000 customers and companies using Sumall's data analytics. You've probably heard about big businesses using business intelligence. Well, now anybody can use Sumall. Companies like Amazon and PayPal and eBay and Authorize.net are connecting their stuff, BigCommerce, Basecamp, AdSense, to Sumall. And then you get amazing graphs, amazing information connecting the data, telling you this is modern analytics. You can integrate your stuff with other related data streams. You can have personalized daily or weekly emails telling you how your business or company or social project is working. You can have if you're doing a Kickstarter, you'd be crazy not to set this up. Find out how your tweets are impacting your revenue. You can export into spreadsheets. There's a spreadsheet view built in. There are dozens of features. There's also new, a Sumall mobile app for iPhone that gives you up-to-the-minute real-time data. Imagine the real-time data on your phone, on your online store's performance, or how things are going on that PR campaign you launched. Historical stats allow you to keep track of where you were versus where you are today. This is all on the iPhone. You could track revenue, units sold, discount patterns, an Android app soon to come. So what I suggest you do is you just go there. It's free. And sign up for an account. Start connecting a few web services. Three would be a great place to start. You know, everybody's got Twitter and Facebook, maybe Google Analytics or, you know, something like that, Amazon. And start taking a look at the kinds of insights you get. Why should this be limited to only big business? Everybody can take advantage of SumAll. No credit card needed. It is free, as in doesn't cost anything. SumAll.com. We use it. We're using it now to track how our social media campaigns relate to downloads and to attention and to visits on YouTube, stuff like that. It's really, really great. I guess I didn't want to. I didn't want to go all gawker on you, but I guess I kind of have to now.
Me?
Got to talk.
Where were
love,
you last night?
Love triangle, baby. So it started this week when Hugo Barra, who was really in many ways the face of Android at Google's I/O and other presentations. He demonstrated the Nexus 7 at the breakfast with Sundar Pichai a couple of weeks ago. Hugo Barra announces, I'm leaving Google to go to a Chinese Android manufacturer. He does it on, of course, Google Plus. How do you say this Chinese Android manufacturer's name? Xiaomi?
Xiaomi.
Xiaomi. Which means little me. I guess if you want to paint a bright light on it, Xiaomi's potentially a huge partner for Android. And here's the guy from the Android team going over there to work with them, to join them together with Google. Or you could point out, who knew, Sergey Brin apparently is separated from his wife and has been dating Hugo Barra's ex-girlfriend. Maybe she was an ex when it started. I don't know. I don't want to get all gossipy on this, so I don't know. But it might be germane if, it was sudden. You also have people saying, what's going on at Android? Andy Rubin leaves. Hugo Barra leaves. Other very big names in the Android team depart. None of you want to touch this, do you?
It's
I don't blame you. I didn't even want to bring it up.
I'd like to wish my wife a happy 19th wedding.
Congratulations.
Anniversary.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't that wonderful? About this.
That's very nice. No, really, 19. That's good.
Yeah, I was thinking about the life cycles of companies, and the fact is, every company has at least, they if they're lucky, they have this big ascent phase, and then they got the people when they're on top, and a lot of those people have got a lot of money, or they've got a lot of cachet, or they feel like they're not getting the exposure that they deserve because they're behind the number one, and it happens. And I feel like Google, personal issues aside, I think Google is at that point where we've seen some of this movement with Andy Rubin and some of these other executives, where Google is so huge and has been so successful that some of the people at Google seem to be a little restless. And it happens everywhere. It happens at Microsoft, happens at Apple. It happens everywhere. But I think we're seeing some of that now because Google has matured as a company.
I mean, is that the point where the founders and the people that have led the ascent should kind of maybe spend less time?
Maybe that's like all that. It feels like, doesn't it feel like there's more to the story, that there's like something going on?
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time a company's been affected by, romantic, issues affecting management. But, you've seen it in all parts of society. I mean, General Petraeus and all that. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Wow.
It's... I mean, there's a lot.
I don't know what the story is. And I don't pretend to know what the story is. But Hugo Barra didn't feel like the kind of guy who was about to abandon ship, right? I mean, this wasn't so long ago. He was showing us the Nexus 7. He was, in many ways, one of their best presenters, one of their faces up front. And it was, he felt like kind of an abrupt departure.
Maybe it was just a clash of egos.
And maybe Xiaomi said, "Hey, we'll give you $5 million signing bonus," and it's hard to turn that down. I don't know.
It's entirely possible. Xiaomi and Huawei are both making some pretty big advancements, or advances, I should say, right now, and trying to really be a bigger player in the worldwide smartphone market. And they're making huge steps forward, too. Their devices are really nice at this point, and it just seems like they kind of need a little bit of extra help on the presentation front and probably could use some more insight into the worldwide market if they want to conquer right. the worldwide market. So Huawei and Xiaomi are both making big plays, and ZTE as well. So I'm sure that was a part of it, too. But, yeah, it does seem like there's a little bit more of this story.
It's, yeah. What can I say? I don't want to go all Gawker. It's just, it is what it is. Actually, as long as we're talking all things D, Kara Swisher has an interesting article in which she kind of posits that we were talking last week about Steve Ballmer leaving Microsoft and wondering what happened there. And she says it was much more abrupt than one thinks. And in fact, there's now, it looks like, going to be a little bit of a there's an interesting tit for tat, I would guess. Value Act, which is a activist investor, was planning to file a proxy battle. Are you having thunderstorms?
Strike of lightning about in mile away.
Whoa! So,
right outside my window there. Sorry about that.
Whoa!
I'll try to mute the mic quickly when I see the flash of lightning to beat the thunder. We'll see how quick my reflex.
They've been given a seat on the board, and some were thinking that Value Act also helped push Steve Ballmer out the door and might have even said, hey, give us a seat on the board and get rid of Ballmer, and we won't have this proxy. We won't have to fight this ugly fight. They only have a 0.8% in a stake in Microsoft, but I guess that's big enough.
To make a stink.
To pay attention, yeah. Kara also writes that it was a fairly swift departure, more sudden than portrayed by the company. According to sources close to the situation, it was neither planned nor as smooth as portrayed. The decision to go seems to have technically been Ballmer's, writes Kara. Mm-hmm. Interviews with people inside and outside the company, including many close to the situation, indicate he had not aimed to leave this soon, especially after that recent restructuring that he had been so heavily involved in. She says that her sources say the timeline had been moved up drastically, first by him, then the 9-member board, including his champion and friend, Bill Gates, who all agreed it was best if he leaves sooner than later.
I mean, if you're the CEO and the moment you say I'm leaving, I kind of feel like it's no longer your call about when you leave. And it sort of sounds like that. He's like, well, I'll leave eventually.
Right.
Or, maybe a little sooner. And the board finally said, no.
How about now?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how effective can you be if you're already announcing your departure?
It's not unheard of to have long executive CEO transitions, though, right? I mean,
but it's kind of not his call. I mean, I think it definitely is the board's call.
The board gets
say,
to decide at that point.
You know, we need this to happen faster. If you're going to go, we need you to go now.
They probably had a very Band-Aid kind of thought about it, like, you know, you pull it off fast instead of very slow to make the pain.
But I think of like Alan Mulally, CEO at Ford, who has been preparing for his retirement for at least a couple of years. It's kind of a known thing. And he wants an orderly transition. Now, the difference is he's an incredibly successful CEO, and I don't think you could say that about Steve Ballmer.
Right, and clearly the board is okay with that. And what we've learned about Microsoft's board is that they weren't okay with him hanging around.
Right. Okay, we're done. That's all the news there is this week. Thank you very much.
You mentioned Kara Swisher. Isn't it interesting? There was that story this week about how All Things D, that they're actually in conversation with Dow Jones about whether Kara and Walt and company are going to stay
with
Dow Jones or go out on their own. That's the one story that Kara hasn't been reporting on.
Yeah, she didn't write about that.
She's been making jokes about it, though. It's who knows what will happen. They built a great business. It's not widely known. Dow Jones owns All Things D, but other than Walt, none of the All Things D people are employed by Dow Jones.
Kara was a Wall Street Journal reporter.
Right, but they now all work for All Things D, but they built this big business, and it'll be interesting to see what happens because, you know, they are a real asset to News Corp, and I wonder if Rupert Murdoch is going to end up having to make a call about, you know, are they going to make a deal with these guys or not?
So it's not baseball,
I know, but that's a really great site.
Kara's been on this show many times. Yeah. Walt has for some reason never returned my calls, but the impression I'm getting is that Walt and Kara went to Murdoch and said, we want out.
Well, there's a lot of people on the outside don't realize the degree of autonomy that All Things D has.
Total.
It's not
total
part of the Wall Street Journal. Walt
right.
writes for the Journal, but this is a totally separate setup in San Francisco. They're right across the street from us. They're on Second Street, I believe, by South Park in San Francisco. And it'll be interesting to see because they built up a whole lot of personal brand themselves with all
the
people.
Well, and Liz Gaines, who was here last week, is
great roster of people at All Things
Peter
D.
Kafka, Pachkowski.
Yeah, Ina Fried. Yeah.
Ina Fried. They have the brand names out there. And, you know, this is what's changed very much in journalism. You could be a great brand name at a newspaper, but you still needed the newspaper.
Right.
You don't need the newspaper anymore, right? If you're a brand name.
Well, All Things D has been built thanks to all of those connections to the Wall Street Journal. But it's been built now.
It's done.
They've done their job, and now they're they're all names.
Is News Corp a liability to them?
Huh. I don't think so. I think they're, but I don't think they're necessarily as big an asset as they used to be. I don't know.
In February, Reuters said that discussions had been begun with Dow Jones about either ending or extending the partnership, which is set to expire at the end of this year, December 31st.
Right.
Since then, Fortune has learned All Things D is working with an investment bank to find outside investors. You see somebody like Jessica Lessen leaving the Wall Street Journal, starting her own enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sarah Lacey leaving TechCrunch, starting her own enterprise. These brands, these stars, why not?
I know. That's. I mean,
why not, Jason Snell? Absolutely. Why don't you just go out and do your own thing?
And when I've got great writers who work for me, it's the same. It's the same question.
You have that question all the time.
All the time.
Well, as a broadcaster, this is always the problem. You know, I'm on the other end of this now because for years as talent, that was always the threat. Well, I can always go across the street. That's how you get better deals. Now, as a guy who hires talent, I see it from the other point of view.
You want to find stars. You want to make stars.
Right.
But once they're stars, maybe they don't need you so much. I mean, it's a difficult situation.
And you see that. I don't know if you remember that, but you'd see that at places like Tech TV where they really want to kind of keep their thumb on you because their fear is if Patrick Norton gets too big, then we can't afford him. We're going to lose him.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act.
So make them successful enough that they're a brand name, but not so successful
not so,
that they can leave.
Yeah, and I think the internet era has completely changed that because really, as all of these names that I just mentioned have learned, and Tim Stevens too, I'm sure at some point you considered maybe I shouldn't join CNET and I should just do my own thing.
It's certainly part of the calculation,
absolutely.
Right?
It certainly was, and there's certainly a lot of questions, a lot of decisions that went into that process. But ultimately, CNET's a great platform, and that's why I decided to go there. But certainly, it's certainly an age when you can be very successful as an independent. The question is, how successful can you be when it comes to monetizing that success, and how well can you do that without having to compromise your core values in doing that sort of thing individually, and how much time do you want to spend lining up advertising deals and that kind of thing. And that's really a lot of what comes into being a success, both in terms of, putting food on the table for your family, which is an important thing, but also having a zillion Twitter followers and all that good stuff too. So, you have to decide what priorities you want and that kind of thing. But ultimately, if indeed Kara and Walt and Mike and the incredible writers that they have there do walk away, that's a huge loss.
No kidding. I'm sure they make a ton of money. Yeah,
and I hope that the folks there realize that. I get the feeling that this is kind of a traditional corporation that maybe they don't realize just how important this news publication is to the world of tech journalism at large, and how the world of tech journalism is as fragmented as it is. But yet, this is an incredibly strong voice. It'd be a real shame if that got kind of messed up through whatever is happening now and whatever is going to continue to happen over the next few weeks.
It's really interesting to watch this happen. In fact, I think I'm going to quit Twit and start my own company.
You should.
Because I only started my own company because I was kind of thrust out of Tech TV. I would have probably stayed at Tech TV forever, but they got rid of me and they sold the company. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me, was starting my own business and owning it all.
Well, and this is how the internet's changed everything, is you weren't going to start your own television network and get carriage on cable systems.
Couldn't do it.
And
it cost literally $100 million a year to do that.
And people wouldn't start up a new magazine. It would take you'd have to have lots of investors and things to start up a new magazine or a newspaper. But now with the internet, starting up internet broadcast, website, you can
do
it.
Look at JessicaLessen.com. It's a freaking WordPress. Right? And she's hiring people, and I'm sure they're going to get investors. And because of her name, she's a very high quality reporter for the Wall Street Journal. That's
you
it.
You don't necessarily even need investors. I mean, that's the amazing thing is for some of this stuff, you know, depending on your scale, you may be able to do it all yourself. Or you're like,
I took
Walton
no
Kara,
investors.
Maybe it's millions and millions of dollars of investment to build a new brand or to extend the existing. It's just, it's kind of cool because it's a whole other outlet or possible outlet for talented people.
And knowing Kara as I do and Walt somewhat, these guys are tough and they're smart and they are very independent and bloody-minded. And I could easily see them saying, what do we need Burdock for? What do we need News Corp for? We could do this. We could take all the money, all the revenue, and make it easy. Wow, I love it. I didn't know that was happening.
Since you mentioned Kara, we love Kara. We love Walt.
We love Kara. We love them. That's a great company. Now, the only thing from the point of view of the user, and I'm a user, I'm a reader, is it's nice to be able to go to one place and see all these, and there is a certain synergy of having Ina Fried and Liz Gaines and Kara Swisher out on the street and then coming back. And creating an entire narrative around what's happening in technology that you lose when you're just by yourself.
Right. I mean, that's exactly it. When we talk about, you know, you've got individual bloggers and you've got these big media companies, but I think there's room for something in between. And All Things D is actually a great example where they're not a newsroom with 100 people, but they're also not a bunch of individual bloggers. They're all kind of together and coordinated. Right. And I think that can make for some really cool sites with, you know, 5, 10. Core contributors.
And I guess the way we consume nowadays, it was only because you had to print a paper and deliver it to the doorstep that you read everything that was in the New York Times. The way we consume nowadays, even without Google Reader, is a little here, a little there. There's a link on Twitter. I don't pay attention to the source so much, right?
Well, I mean, you would at some point. I mean, like,
would you? Does it matter?
Well, you know, I would probably trust something more from, like, a news story from the BBC, then, you know.
I don't know. If Kara Swisher says it, that's a brand. That's as, from the tech world, that's as big a brand as the BBC, maybe better than the BBC in the tech world.
But, you know, at the same time, don't you lose a lot of the assets that you had as part of a larger organization?
Yes, the camera crew, the lights. What do you lose? She just goes out, she thinks, she types, it's on a blog. What has she lost?
I mean, you know, wouldn't
she? Marketing? I don't think they market her at all.
I mean, you know, I take this from a video perspective, and you know, it's really easy to say, yeah, you can strike it on your own and do, you know, do this, you know, sans a large company.
You've gone in the opposite direction. Revision 3 was independent, has now been acquired by Discovery.
And you know, there's certain things that don't scale well,
right?
As you try to get large. Now, if you want to maintain the same size, you know, for the rest of the foreseeable life of wherever your operation is, I mean, it's probably not an issue, but if you want to grow it,
right,
you're going to grow into a bunch of growing pains, and you're going to start adding on those elements that you wanted to divest yourself of initially. So, I mean, like what kind of Tim was alluding to, I mean, there's just a lot of other things that you now have to start thinking of besides just doing the editorial, you know, journalism portion of it. And, you know, it's probably a great move for them, but in a...
You're speaking as somebody in their position as an employee.
Yeah,
there's a weighing that goes on,
and you definitely shoulder a lot more risk.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, if you have a family and
that's why it was good I got fired, because I had nothing to lose. There's no risk.
Well, exactly.
You're already out on the street.
Yeah, and so whatever you do now, I mean, it can't be any worse than what you had before.
Boy, that's really depressing.
There's also the D conference, which we shouldn't forget in this discussion, which is a great conference. I'm pretty sure that's making them some money too, and you know, a lot of great news comes out of that. I don't know whether that's backed by the Wall Street Journal or whether that's funded by All Things D themselves. You know, it's not exactly a hugely lavish affair, but it is an incredibly great conference. You know, we always covered it very thoroughly and get a lot of great news out of it at Engadget. So I'm guessing that that's a big piece of the equation here too, and I hope that again that goes along with whatever property comes out of this.
I'm sure they own that, and they also do All Things Mobile. Liz Gaines runs that one. I've always been told, I think the TechCrunch people said this, the conferences are the big money. I don't know if IDG would agree. Yeah.
It can be big money.
It can be. The ones where people come and pay like thousands of dollars to come,
that's
those
the
are
ones.
Big money.
We're willing to pay.
They could be the hole in the boat, but they could also be, you know, the water you float on. Yep. In the case of consumer conferences, probably not
it's
the
tougher.
Best direction to be
tough
in.
Tougher world,
Yeah, make sure you charge at least $5,000. It's a good point. We're going to take a break, come back with more. I'm in a very exciting time in my Audible subscription. Just finished a book this morning, a book that was god-awful long, I'll be honest with you, Great North Road by Peter Hamilton. I've been ready for it to be done for about 18 hours. It's like 40 hours. So I'm going to do something short now, but that's why it's great when you're an Audible listener, because I've been listening to another book, I've been buying other books. I've got a whole library of wonderful books waiting for me at audible.com. I decided, I was listening to science fiction, so I like to alternate fiction with nonfiction. So I'm currently listening to, I think it's nonfiction, it's called The Denial of Death by Ernest Becker. Somebody told me I should listen to this. Maybe Alexis Ohanian or somebody like that said, oh, you got to listen to this. A Pulitzer Prize winner in 1974. It is why evil exists in the world. That's all I'm going to say. On the other hand, maybe you'd like something a little lighter, like Mark Maron's Attempting Normal. Mark narrates it himself. If you ever listened to WTF, his fabulous podcast, or watched his new show, this would be a great one to listen to. Funny guy. Now, the point is, I'm going to get you one of these books, maybe two. Let's get two free. What are you listening to right now, Jason?
I want to recommend a book called The Killing Moon by N.K. Jemisin, which is the first book in what I guess will be a series. It's sort of a fantasy set in this kind of desert planet. It's about these...
Is it sci-fi? What is it?
It's more fantasy.
Fantasy.
It's these guys who collect people's... They collect the souls of the dying, which is a great benefit to their culture, except that they're also... Their opposition are kind of these guys who tear the souls of the living away from them and kill them. And there's this kind of battle between good and evil and the kings who rule. And it's really great. It's one of the better books I've read in the last year. And she wrote a previous trilogy that was also fantastic. And it's on Audible.
N.K. Jemisin.
N.K. Jemisin. She's great.
The Dreamblood Saga, The Killing Moon, Book 1.
Yeah, I know it sounds all... It's not fantasy like sword and sorcery. It's very...
No, this sounds
very
good.
Very different kind of desert adventure kind of stuff. It's really great.
Or Dune-ish style.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I want to...
It's not like guys with swords. And
I hate it when you guys swords, do this suppose, to me. Now this is another book I have to listen to.
I know.
I listened to the Incarnation series by Piers Anthony, which is probably a more light... treatment of this kind of thing.
I read that when I was in...
Yeah, like when you're 12. School, yeah. That's about as far as I can go, okay?
Piers Anthony, Diminishing Returns, the first book's always great.
I love his stuff,
second
yeah.
book, not so great.
Right,
third
he goes
book,
downhill real
not,
quick. Yeah. How about you, Tim? What do you want to recommend, since you're an Audible listener?
I tend to listen to the Mary Roach books, so I just finished Packing for Mars, which is great if you're a space nerd, as I am. And I'm listening to Bonk, which is on humans and animal sexuality, which is very fascinating. So they're all very well read, and they're all absolutely fascinating. So any of the Mary Roach books are very, very good.
She Stiff was the first one I was aware of. That was The Curious Life of Human Cadavers. Bonk was about sex. She's got Gulp, which is about... eating stuff, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife. So Packing for Mars is about going to Mars.
Yeah,
is that right?
It starts out by kind of talking about the sorts of things that you need for long-term space travel, but ultimately it kind of turns into this kind of interesting retro look at how NASA prepared for the trip to the moon and how do you poop in space and things like that. You know, lots of interesting anecdotes and stories about
she's great.
Astronaut training and that kind of thing. So it's a really great book.
I just love her. She's fabulous.
She is.
Mary Roach. Well, now we've given you about 20 different things you could listen to. But here's the deal. I'm going to get you two books anyway, all right? If you visit audible.com/twit and the number two, one word, audible.com/twit2. You're going to sign up for the Platinum account. That's a subscription, which is really the most affordable way to do this. You get two books a month for your subscription, and you get your choice of the daily audio edition of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. I often forget to mention that, and that is really a great benefit. There are 150,000 titles to choose from. When you visit audible.com/twit2, you'll have 30 days to get your first two books. Cancel any time in that first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. The books will be yours forever. I don't think you're going to ever cancel. I think you're going to love it. We do. And if you listen to shows, that means you probably like audio stuff. audible.com/twit2. Offer good in the U.S. and Canada. If you're listening outside the U.S. or Canada, don't worry. Audible still exists. You just can't take advantage of this particular thing. But they have subscription deals. And please do try it. I think you're going to really love it. audible.com/twit2. some interesting stuff out of Yahoo. I'm digging, man. I am really digging. And we've been watching 30 days of typefaces go by as they pretend to choose a new logo. And they're still doing it, right? This week is the final thing. If you go to yahoo.com, all it's been is different typefaces. So this is the current one today.
Ah, didn't even notice.
Yeah. 30 days, big deal. One of these days I'll come up with a new one. It's still going to be purple, still going to have an exclamation mark. I don't know if it matters. Here's something they did, though, that I'm pissed off about. I'm not happy. They've announced that they are going to recycle email names.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you ought to know about this because this is really bad. If you have an email address at Yahoo Mail, Yahoo.com, and you haven't used it, what is it, 6 months? If you haven't used it in a while, I don't know what the they're gonna reuse it. Mm-hmm. come on, Yahoo, give me a break. The idea is that after there'll be a period of where nobody will get to use it, and then. But if I never use Leo at Yahoo.com and you get it, you'll be getting anything I had sent to that.
There's a guy I follow on Twitter who said that he got one of his reclaimed Yahoo addresses and immediately got like an invitation for somebody's party or something.
Terrible.
That was still going to the old Yahoo address.
Ugh.
Not good.
Now, apparently, if you pay him $1.99, mm-hmm.
You gotta love that.
You can enter up to 5 Yahoo usernames and they'll let you know when they're available. Hmm. So that makes it even easier to hack Leo Laporte at Yahoo.com, right?
You just got
to
squat.
Just squat on it, and then the minute I let it go by accident, you got it. And you can go to my Twitter account and all my other accounts and just see, you know, just ask for a password reset. Just see if it works.
You know, it's very interesting how email's used and how people actually don't think twice about it because they just assume it's always there. Because for the past 6 months, I keep getting other people's emails through my Google account.
And Google doesn't reuse emails.
No, but I think part of it is people don't...
Errors.
Well, people don't double check. So I've been getting prescription receipts.
I've been getting that for a long time. That's terrible, isn't it?
But it's just one of those terrible things that people won't notice.
Because I'm Laporte@gmail.com, I get a lot of French mail to other Laportes.
I get French... I get Spanish. I got a couple of Portuguese.
Chang is a common name in Portugal.
It's not. I don't have Chang in my email address.
I get stuff from New Zealand all the time. There's a Tim Stevens in New Zealand who can't remember his email address, apparently. So whenever he books a flight, I get his flight confirmation. And I've always been tempted to go and change his reservation form. I haven't yet.
I've done that. Someday.
So I think it's
sent,
a...
You've been sending those emails to my address.
No. I've actually changed someone's...
No, that's illegal. Don't do that.
I changed the email address. It's not.
Oh, just to get them off your case. Yeah.
I didn't change who they were.
There's a wedding photographer who in the South somewhere who is obviously last name Snell, first name begins with a J. And everybody sends email to like me.com or mac.com.
Right.
And that's mine.
Right.
And, you know, I do write them back and say, I am not your wedding photographer because I don't want to ruin a wedding.
I guess that's
just
a good
through
thing.
Inaction. I don't want to ruin somebody's wedding.
Right. But we emailed you that we moved the day a week earlier. You didn't show up.
That.
Some guy from Macworld showed up.
That's right. And I just have like a point-and-shoot camera. I just
took
my
all
iPhone.
The pictures with an iPhone. It wasn't what we were hoping for.
But it also underscores the fact that, you know, you don't really own your email address, especially on a website.
I admit, but how many people use a Yahoo address? We often have said... create a unique email address just for password resets, not your main address, so that people don't guess it. So how many people did that and made it on Yahoo.com because it was free, and now that's their password reset, and they don't ever use it. 6 months later, bada bing, bada boom, somebody else has it. That's not right. And by the way, Yahoo can coin an entire new set of email addresses by changing it from Yahoo to YahooMail.com. Now you get them all over again. Or whatever. You know, they can make it Yahoo One.
Because they want to wring money out of you, and they don't want to pay to support all those email addresses that sit there.
I think this is seems somehow to violate the principles of the internet. Doesn't it?
To make money?
Yes, it does. That's totally wrong. Obviously, there are a lot of companies out there who can't figure out how to make money.
You're not allowed to make money. No, I understand it's a dormant address, but if it's dormant, what is the period of time that it's dormant for? I don't know what it is. Is it 6 months?
It might be 6 months. It should be a long period of time, and they should have an auto reply during that time that says you need to remove this address. And I mean, I don't know how clear Yahoo is about how they process this, but it's pretty scary because somebody just doesn't remember to do it, and their address is going to get taken away.
Well, and it's even worse now because they're letting people pay $1.99 to sit on it.
Squat on them, yeah.
So would any of us actually pay that amount of money to try to grab one of these precious
those exclusive Yahoo email accounts?
A hacker might. A hacker might sit on a bunch of well-known people at Yahoo.com just in case.
I'm Jay Snell almost everywhere, and I'm not on Yahoo. And I thought about it. I sat on that page for about 5 minutes, and then I went, $2? No, it's not even worth it.
I mean, if
so
you're Yahoo.
You have to be inactive for a year or more. And at that point, they will put it on a list for a couple of months as nobody can have it. But then they'll give it to the highest bidder or whatever.
Ooh, well, no, I think whoever's in line. For
whoever's in line, $1.98.
That would be worse if they were actually taking bids.
Actually, it'd be kind of cool to see if, like, you know, Jason Stunnell at Yahoo.com is like a very sought-after email address. And adds to your cachet.
Mm. That's how they do license plates in the UK. You can bid on special license plate codes if you like to. Why not do it for email addresses? Mm.
So there'll be a 30-day period between deactivation. That's not long enough. Between deactivation and the time those IDs get reused. During this time, we'll send bounce-back emails alerting senders the deactivated account no longer exists. None of this would help you, though, if you'd use it as a Twitter backup for your password reset, right? We will also unsubscribe these accounts from commercial emails. Oh, they'll kill spam. From commercial emails such as newsletters and email alerts, among others. Upon deactivation, we will send notification for these potentially recycled accounts to merchants, e-commerce sites, financial institutions. So, Yahoo, you could just put an exclamation mark in there or something and get the whole namespace over. It seems somehow it's not, I guess, a violation of internet protocol, but it seems like it ought to be.
What's funny is that I have a Yahoo email account and it's spam. So whoever gets it
is going to get your spam,
which is great because I don't have to deal with it.
Paid $1.99 to get Roger's old spam.
Woohoo!
Such a deal. Does anybody understand this Twitter conversations thing? And is anybody excited about this?
Blue
the
lines.
Blue line. What the hell is that? I don't get it.
It's so you can follow a conversation.
Yeah. First of all, people stop having conversations.
You could do before by clicking the conversation button, but now it expands it partially and shows that there is a conversation going on, which is nice, except you end up seeing the same tweet over and over again because different people reply.
Hey, this is interesting. Maybe this is because of the Yahoo thing. Twitter's saying, is that still your email?
Oh, I wonder if someone tried to access your...
No, but I bet you that I think companies will have to do that now periodically, right? Is your email still current?
A bank does it every quarter.
Kaiser does it regularly, yeah. But probably because of reusing email addresses. Mm.
No, why won't it?
It's current. It's still current. I'm just trying to find a blue line.
It's a nice idea, but they didn't code it right.
A blurred line? Is it a blue line?
There's a blue line. Tom Mara
and Serafina are talking. Now, what do? I click the line?
Or you can click expand.
Yep. Expand? Uh-huh.
The lower right. There you go.
Ooh. Oh, ooh.
Didn't really add anything.
Ooh. So now I know it wasn't a very long conversation, but those two were related.
So, if you're in one of the Twitter mobile apps, or if you're on the website, it will expand these threads. Look, it's me talking to Glenn.
You and Glenn, and there you go. And so now I can see more.
Yeah, so you see this little conversation with a blue line.
It's making it a bit more like Google Plus, which is good. That was always one of the biggest complaints that I had about Twitter. And one of the things that I like best about Google Plus is that if somebody asks you a question about a tweet, you know, 10 other people will ask you the same question and you have to reply to them individually. Now, in theory, if someone actually takes the time to expand that conversation, they'll see the answer too. The problem is, of course, they actually have to take the time to do what you just did and click on the link and expand it and then read everything. Whereas in Google Plus, it's all neatly organized and categorized.
Plus,
it's a step in the right direction.
Plus, nobody, if you're using a third party client, they don't do it. And I would think a lot of us use tech.
Which is another reason why they're trying to shut those down as quickly as they can.
Yeah, we want to own this. Jason, Sadly. You seem to be the guy who's really getting involved in all of these are yours.
Yeah.
In my feed.
I tweet a lot.
You tweet and you talk to people. See, I have been saying, I agree. I love threaded conversations. That's why I left Twitter way back when and went to, Jaiku, remember that?
Right, right.
Yeah. And then I left Twitter again and went to Plurk. And then I left Twitter again and went to Pounce, all of which had threaded conversations, and all of which failed because they had threaded conversations. It was too complicated. People just wanted to tweet out into the universe. And I'm turning into, for some reason, I'm turning into that comedian, Lewis Black. I don't know why. But maybe. And then... and then... and I think threaded conversations were always grafted onto Twitter and didn't belong there anyway. Why are you having conversations? That's not what it's for. I love Google Plus. Use Google Plus. Don't use
Twitter. The thing is that Twitter can't say that, right? Twitter wants to solve all problems.
Could be a mistake.
Ever, but it could be a mistake. And I've seen a lot of people complaining about the blue lines because
it's complicated.
People don't like seeing duplication in their timelines. Mm,
it's just weird.
That all said, it is really hard to follow conversations on Twitter. So I appreciate that they're trying to... Well, people are having them, though. That's the thing. But I'm not sure this is the right solution, but it's interesting to see that they're trying.
I've had debates with people who say... You know, the people who do interviews, they do chats on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just hate... It just feels like this isn't where you... There's so many places you could do this.
I still want to do a Twitter drama. Where you people follow the same 10 or 12 people.
They've done that. Yeah, I've seen that. It's where there's different characters with different accounts and they all interact. And
Tom Merritt and I created a novel, 140-character novel, a long time ago. There's nothing. It's over. It ended in 2009. But each person who was involved in this would tweet. I think like Veronica and Tom and a bunch of people had access to this. And we would each get one sentence. And you had to build on the other person's sentence. It was a really good idea.
What happened?
It ended. Somebody wrote the end.
That's the cheap way out. Yeah, I think start that up again.
That sucks. Twitter, actually, they wrote the end a year after the last sentence.
Twitter,
meanwhile, it's Centauri Station.
Twitter's best when people who use Twitter figure out new ways to use it.
And I agree.
Twitter adding new features itself isn't always the best. Hashtags,
at replies, all invented by third parties.
Yeah, but you do see ways people hack Twitter that aren't that great. Like, I have people in my timeline who do replies, public replies. They do a reply to somebody I'm not following, but they put a period in front of it. And it's like spamming my timeline. Like, I don't know what your conversation is. Why are you...
Don't do that.
Why are you replying in public to this private conversation? You know,
I'm so over Twitter.
How private can it be on Twitter?
Yeah, you use it a lot.
I use it all the time.
Why?
It's like the internet water cooler. It's people who I otherwise wouldn't connect with because they're not around me, and we talk. And
I mean, I use it, like it and I read it.
It's kind of like the bus stop.
Yeah, and it's not. You don't read every tweet. You know, you just kind of scroll through and see.
You can't
what's
read
going
every
on.
Tweet. Yeah. How about Facebook, kids? So
Is that still on?
It's still going. Did you get the email today this week saying we're changing everything, but don't worry about it because it's all the same? Or something. I don't understand what it was. It was very strange.
Yes. New privacy policy.
But it's just for the old privacy policy rewritten, right? Because they've always been using... So the whole... apparently when it was all about using your name and image in advertising to your friends.
Mm.
Is that right? So they changed the language the old language, and this might have had to do with the fact that there was a court settlement on Monday dealing with these. They called them sponsored stories. The settlement required us, says Facebook, to provide additional language around the use of people's information for sponsored stories. So we had an example and provided more detail. They didn't make it any easier to turn it off. The new language says, in fact, is actually kind of a little bit more assertive. You give us permission to use your name and profile picture, content, and information in connection with commercial, sponsored, or related content, like a brand you like, served or enhanced by us. That means, and here's the example, for example, that you permit a business or other entity to pay us to display your name or profile picture with your content or information without any compensation to you. If you've selected a specific audience for your content information, we'll respect that choice. So when I see Roger Chang recommends Depends adult diapers.
Potentially at some point in my life.
At some point in your life. It's basically an uncompensated ad. endorsement by Roger Chang.
Which is, you know, it's funny because I actually don't do a lot of or any of that on Facebook because, I don't know, it's...
All you have to do is like a brand, and now you're going to be in that brand's ads. And so you got to be very careful about who you like.
It was starting to get tough in, you know, the tech journalism and news world because a lot of companies were starting to post press releases and news and product launch information on their Facebook pages. So I had to go through and like Samsung and like a bunch of other companies that, you know, I may or may not actually like. But now, you know, these sorts of endorsements almost are showing up in my friends' feeds. And it looks like Tim Stevens likes Samsung, which is, you know, it almost looks like a paid endorsement. But I kind of had to do it just because Samsung was announcing product stuff on Facebook.
But that's damaging to you. Absolutely. It's damaging to you.
Yeah.
So you could go and unlike everybody, or you can go, and good luck finding this, if you go to your Facebook page and click the padlock next to your name in the upper left-hand corner, what you'll get is the, you know, the quick and easy privacy settings, but that's not what you want. What you want is see more settings, and they've spread out these privacy settings over six different categories, including security, privacy, timeline, apps, and ads. You got to go to ads, and then
follow along.
There's two kinds of ads. There's everyone wants to know what their friends like. That's why everybody wants to know this. That's why we pair ads and friends, an easy way to find products and services you're interested in based on what your friends share and like. And you can have that set to only my friends, which is the default, or no one. Pair my social actions with ads for no one. Please. I don't want to be, you know, Tim Stevens loves Samsung. Why don't you?
Or Roger recommends Depends.
Now, there's an interesting one above this. Facebook does not give third-party applications or ad networks the right to use your name or picture in ads. They don't do it currently. But if we allow this in future, the setting you choose will determine how you have to choose for what they might do in the future, just in case. You know what? I would suggest changing this, because if they say we might be doing this, they're probably going to do it. Right?
Preemptive opt-out.
And again, that's one. Well, who will see those third-party sites?
Yeah, I read that as sort of like, we haven't sold this yet.
We're thinking.
But we're working on it.
The sales team's really optimistic about next quarter.
Oh, man. I don't know. Am I wrong to be disgruntled?
Well, you said no, you know, it says no money paid to you or no value to you. But of course, you get the benefit of using Facebook for free. That is really the...
Connecting with literally millions of people.
Everybody you didn't want to keep in touch with after high school.
And having dozens of friend requests from women in bikinis every day, which is always interesting.
Wait a minute. You get...
Really?
What?
I don't get that.
You don't get those?
Oh, man.
Boy,
Tim, those are real.
I've got a couple right here, and they're not looking too real to me.
Yeah.
In a variety of ways. You can interpret that however you like.
Oh, hey.
Ladies and gentlemen... John C. Dvorak.
Google Maps.
Well, we're just about out of time. But.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, John.
See you guys next week.
Hey, boy, so there was a jumper on the bridge and that held you up.
It was one of the many things.
Okay.
Also, Google Maps, I'm telling you, has been...
You're an Apple Maps guy now. You've decided that Apple Maps is the way to go.
Well, I don't use them, so I can't say that for sure. But all I know, this has been changed drastically. I would have been here 45 minutes ago.
It gave you the wrong route?
No, yeah. It wanted me to go where the jumper was, which was stop dead.
Right.
So then it sent you across the Bay Bridge.
They just incorporated Waze into Google Maps, traffic information from Waze into Google Maps. Apparently it's not giving you the...
They said 56 minutes, and it was 56 minutes plus 45. Whoa. It was almost
off by
half.
Yeah, that's not good. Mm. All right, well, we'll get settled in. We'll get you something to drink and, you know, your Perrier.
And by the way, I want to mention anybody who comes from out of state and wants to come visit the show.
Yeah.
I've got an unbelievably beautiful route.
You're going to target. Yes. That's whenever 101 was jammed, I would go the side route.
Well, would you take the Carneros Highway?
Oh, that's nice.
Oh,
so you went up through Napa?
Yeah, I had to eventually because 37 was stopped dead.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite an episode.
No, it's beautiful. And the Carneros Inn there is quite nice on the way.
That whole route is just astonishing.
It's the wine country.
And through the 116 and over.
Yeah, isn't that pretty?
Yeah.
I was thinking you might take the one that's more towards the coast. There's a beautiful inland route, or actually coastal route as well. But we'll talk about that another time. I don't think people are probably that interested.
No, they don't care. But some people might be.
This Week in Maps, we'll do that.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I would listen to that. A map podcast, I would listen to that.
All I'd be doing is complaining.
Yeah. Twim.
Are we there yet?
That's what we could call it.
Are we there yet?
That's a good name for it.
That's great. Someone get that domain at yahoo.com.
I'm putting that on my smart hat right now.
Quick, grab that Yahoo email address.
I want a smart hat. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, the creators of GoToMeeting. For many years, really the, and still, but it gets better all the time, the way to share screens to meet with others online. But now they've added incredible HD conferencing. They call it HD Faces. So now you can see the people you're meeting with. You can see their screen. And they've added iPad, iPhone, Android devices. You can even present from your iPad. You can go out on the road and attend a meeting at the pool, at an airport, at a hotel, anywhere you are with your iPad. It feels like you're in the same room. The webcams make it just amazing. And nowadays, with everybody spread out on the go, different offices all over the country, you've got pitches to clients all over the globe, it really helps to have a solution like this. It's so easy to set up a meeting. You do it if you're in Outlook. They have an Outlook plugin, or you just set it up in email. It goes out. Your meeting attendees, it's so easy for them. They just click the link. The software is installed if they don't already have it. They don't need to make a phone call. It just click. It works with their microphone and their speakers, although there is a conference bridge, a free phone bridge if you want to use that. It couldn't be easier. And I think if you're pitching a client, you're talking to a new prospect or a new client or a new colleague, you don't want to make it hard and complicated. You want to make it easy. That's what GoToMeeting does. You try it free for 30 days, and I think you'll agree. GoToMeeting.com. Use the promo code TWIT. 30 days free. And by the way, the software for the iPad or the iPhone or the Android is free as well. Always. GoToMeeting.com. Use our offer code TWIT. I almost feel like we should start the show over now that you're here, John C. Dvorak.
Summarize.
You know, it was one of those shows where there was practically absolutely no news. It was just...
Talk about you.
So we talked about really? You the whole time. Yeah.
Great.
I don't know. I'll pull up stories and you can shoot them down. Apple TV updated, now includes Vivo. I was able to watch topless women on that. That was exciting.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, just here's a little pro tip. If you go into the Vivo settings and you turn off the explicit filter, you can see all the dirty rap videos.
Mm. Yeah. I'll tell my Facebook.
Dirty rap videos?
You know what I was watching? Actually, I was kind of shocked because I like the song Blurred Lines. Song of the Summer, Robin Thicke.
Huh.
There is, well, I watched the regular one.
I thought everybody thought he was a douchebag.
Yeah, I don't know if he's a douchebag. I like the song.
Who knows? His father's a douchebag.
Alan Thicke, great guy. You don't like Alan? No. He's Canadian. How could he be bad?
Well, he just thinks he's a douchebag.
You know
Alan
Thicke?
Growing pains.
I've met him once, and that's enough.
Well, then he
Paul Block, our old producer, was a buddy of his.
Oh,
I know.
But Paul Block was a buddy with everybody if you listen to Paul Block.
Phyllis Diller, you should hear the stories he told.
I think we did.
Wow.
And then, anyway, what was I saying? Oh, so there's two videos. There's like a normal video, the MT video, and then there's like a topless video.
Huh.
I just thought I'd pass that along.
Yeah, that's great.
But actually, now, Apple TV apps, the nice thing about it, and I didn't know this.
I thought Apple wouldn't allow it.
Turns out there's a setting if you go into parental controls, and if you're not a parent, you may never have done that on the Apple TV. But under parental controls, you can literally just turn off as many of the channels as you want to on your Apple. So if you're tired of all of those channels on the Apple TV and you only use five of them, you can actually turn the rest of them off.
It's going to be a problem for them because unlike Roku, where you pick the channel and they have a big channel store, Apple just puts all of them on the front there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them. They just added Disney, Vivo, Disney XD. I don't even know what that is. Weather Channel. The Smithsonian's good. I like the Smithsonian channel. I've been watching that. But look at now, it's getting more and more crowded. I don't think they can add a whole lot more before. That's not even the whole thing. That's the new stuff.
At some point, they got to add a new organizational principle for this. Or they need to beef up that menu that lets you pick which ones you actually want to see.
It's good. That's a good tip, though.
It's in parental controls. You can shut them
off. And you can just say, hey, I'm never going to watch Crackle.
Right. Just Crunchyroll.
Crunchyroll.
If you like anime, it's great, but I'm never going to watch it.
I'm never going to watch Crunchyroll.
I can see what you mean by there being nothing to talk about.
You're just looking at the rundown now.
No, I'm talking about what you're talking about now.
I'm telling you, this was one of the better ones. Apple.
Did you talk a little bit about Ballmer while I was gone?
Yes.
Yeah, we did Ballmer last week. So that was a big, long discussion. We mentioned Kara Swisher saying he was forced out. What do you think? Was he forced out? Was he fired?
I think he was. I have no idea.
Well, you're no help.
I didn't
make it up. You're a pundit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, actually what happens, it turns out that he was going to lose his hand. Oh, I just missed the timing on that one, didn't I?
I was almost, you came so close to the spit take. But, you know, I spit taked yesterday or last week on the
computer.
Maybe
he was caught quirking during the VMA Awards.
I watched those VMA Awards. That is the worst crap I have ever seen.
It's always been like that, though. It's always been crappy. Always.
Is it?
Always.
No, didn't it start out as a tongue-in-cheek thing, and then it just sort of...
It was the MTV Awards, where they gave the Moon Man's out. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me music was better in my day.
When I was a kid.
Yep. Hell yeah, the young people today.
We used to actually touch when we danced.
And the lyrics, you could understand them.
Yes.
Now it's all noise.
Now it's just noise.
All this rock and roll.
Get off of my lawn.
Actually,
What, Roger Chang?
Oh, no, it was...
You may be the youngest person on this panel.
Oh, jeez.
And you're, what, 60?
No. But,
Apple has informed its partners that they should stay... They should cancel all vacations. When is it? September 15th? I think we're gonna see a new phone quickly after the announcement, right? Mm. So September 10th.
And lines is still my prediction. I'm sticking with it.
There won't be any lines. There's never again going to be lines. Apple is training customer support staff on iOS 7, preparing for customer surprise. Oh, yeah. I don't know what that means. Mark Gurman, 9to5 Mac.
That's not good.
What the hell happened to my iPhone?
It's going
to
happen.
It's a surprise.
It's going to freak people out.
They're going to need a lot of people. They're going to do this trade-in idea, which I...
Now they're trying to trade in, too.
Which I think is a note of genius, because it only lasts a little while, but it'll get the sales up there. You believe in the gold phone? You think it's going to happen?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think there's no question there's going to be...
I think it's going to be popular.
Champagne.
It's going to create a line.
A line?
There'll be a line.
I want one.
Line for the gold phone?
I first poo-pooed
Everybody says that. I want
said
one.
It was the Kim Kardashian phone. I said it's the Paris Hilton phone. I don't need bling on my phone, and now I want one. I don't know why. It's just something that looks... I'll tell you why. You know what the real problem, and this is the problem Apple faces, in this TikTok cycle, when you do the 5S, it looks exactly like the 5, right? So there's nobody's going to say, oh, you have the new iPhone. You don't get any of that benefit to buying a new iPhone. Make it gold. People go, oh, you have the new iPhone.
You have the new gold one.
So what do you do for the next phone?
Then you change the shape. You put ears on it or something.
Platinum.
Apple is going to offer an in-store trade-in program. They launched it Friday. A credit for returned iPhones that can be used towards the purchase of a new one.
Think about how many iPhones are in people's drawers unused because
Tons.
They upgraded.
And they didn't gazelle it.
Right. They didn't think
to gazelle.
Exactly. They didn't think to do it. So now Apple's jumping in there saying, hey, we want that money.
It's not the best deal ever.
No, but it's convenient, right? You're literally, they give you a new phone, you hand them your old phone.
It's a one-stop shop.
They give you a discount on your new phone and you walk out.
The maximum value, and this is if it's in perfect condition and all of that, on a iPhone 5, 16 gig is $336. Actually, that's pretty good. That's a lot of money.
I think the Nexus 4 for $199 has got to be the best deal out there. Unlocked.
I have one.
You get one as Smart Man. You get one of those little cards.
I bought one from 2 weeks before they dropped the price. So there.
No, I bought it a
I'm
year.
I'm so pissed off. dropped the price $100 this week.
You get, I know. It's $199. And you get the little card from T-Mobile and the $30 a month plan.
Yep.
Boom.
Boom. Mm. Booyah. You get 100 minutes a month. That should be enough for anybody.
You get unlimited data.
Unlimited texting.
Unlimited texting.
And 100 minutes a month.
I never talk
calls. Talking
100
How
minutes.
How did you tell us you were going to be late? You tweeted it. You didn't call us. You didn't call
Actually,
in.
Actually, I did. I called Chad.
You called Chase in Atlanta. Did he say hello?
Yeah.
Called him or texted him?
I called him. Well, I'm driving.
Yeah.
I can't text and drive. I don't like the idea.
No, I don't like that.
So I called him up. I said, I'm going to be late. And he says, that's great. I'm in Atlanta. So I guess he got through.
So the least they'll pay is for 16 gig 3GS. They'll actually buy that for $52. That's good. That is good. There must be. Is there an aftermarket for these, or are they just?
I think they're refurbishing them for developing
third world
markets.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they're also refurbishing them for Oakland. Which is kind of a developing market. But if you go down to that flea market that they have over by what used to be the drive-in theaters, which is open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and maybe a couple other days during the week, you'll find the vendors in there with hundreds of used iPhones.
Really?
Yes.
But these aren't – these are not coming from Apple. They're coming from other places.
Yeah, they're coming from thieves.
Thieves.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think the fingerprint –
Entrepreneurs. I'm sorry. I used the wrong word.
Apple says they expect questions about iOS 7.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll get them.
You could write the stories now. I think somebody actually has. You could write the stories about iPhone users are up in arms about the upgrade to iOS 7. I just pressed update on my phone, and now it's totally different. I don't understand it, said angry man, man.
Yeah, you can write that now.
You can write it now, because people will be mad, because it's really different, and it behaves differently, and people freak out.
Is it not merely cosmetic? I haven't used it yet. Will it not work the same way?
Well, it works similarly, but there are some differences, and it looks really different.
It does look different.
Yeah, and so people will freak out.
The icon is enough to confuse a lot of people who are used to looking for this one single icon, you know, to get to the internet.
And
if that icon
internet.
Changes, they'll have a hard time finding it.
I know it's on here, but I can't find the internet. Actually, I've had that call with many family members.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one with the globe on it. Where is the internet? Actually, what does it look like on an iPhone?
It's a compass.
It's the same thing.
It's a compass?
Yeah. Safari. It's a similar dumb icon on this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, people will freak out. It'll happen, and there'll be stories written in major newspapers saying Apple has made iPhone users angry by changing the look of their operating system. It's inevitable that it'll happen. I hope they have lots of disclaimers on the upgrade screen.
They should.
This is
going to
be
gonna
really
change.
Different.
Yeah.
Go to this video, see what it's going to be like. Don't freak out.
And stop your complaining.
When a customer calls AppleCare because they do not know how to use a particular function in iOS 7, AppleCare is said to be told to explain that although the system looks completely different, it works exactly the same way. And so they provide them with pictures of the old calendar, the new calendar. They work the same way.
It's going to be okay.
Let
me talk you through this, sir. it's that old, Dan Aykroyd sketch.
Jimmy Carter?
Jimmy Carter is talking down the guy who's who's taking too much LSD. Yeah. Sir, it's going to be okay.
That's actually a very good skit.
Does anyone know what the point of all these changes are?
Get you to buy new stuff. Same reason they put fins on Cadillacs in the 50s. So your old car would not look new.
Well, during a trade-in era, that would make sense.
So it feels new.
New.
It does feel new.
Apple is the company most targeted by patent trolls.
Hey, that's one of my stories.
TechHive says.
TechHive.
This is the new blog that Jason's been, it's beautiful. Yeah. I love it. TechHive.com.
Mark Hoffman on TechHive. Yep. Yeah. Apple is target number one for the trolls.
Patents represent 5% of all U.S. exports in 2009. That's $89.8 billion. It's a big business. It's a jump in patent filings not seen since the Industrial Revolution. Lots of them probably software patents, right?
Yeah.
Patent trolls or non-practicing entities... Mm-hmm. Have been suing Apple like crazy, followed by HP, Samsung. In 2012, more than 4,200 separate companies or individuals were sued by patent trolls. 4,200 last year.
There was a story in the Sunday San Francisco Chronicle about a patent troll hindering app development, and I liked... I mean, it's not a news story. We've seen these stories everywhere, but I liked that it was in the newspaper because I like, you know, any time I see any mainstream media trying to cover the fact that patent trolls are harming innovation in the tech world is a good thing.
I think it's happening. I think, you know, the president has taken a stand against it. I think that it's become more mainstream that this is going on.
Yeah. Every little bit helps.
Yeah. And, you know, podcasting is facing its own patent lawsuits.
Yeah.
And
I thought that faded.
Well, ask the companies being sued. I don't think it has.
Recently?
They're suing, to my knowledge, besides the three that we've mentioned before, now two of the big networks, I think NBC and CBS. So yeah, they're still active. They're still out there. But that's just one of many.
And app developers, I know lots of app developers who've been sued over in-app purchases.
You just don't want. Yeah. You just don't want it. Kills innovation.
If you're an indie developer, you literally it can just destroy your business. Yeah. Just the threat of the lawsuit.
Sad.
It sucks. I mean, like even was it New Zealand? Didn't they just pass a law recently, not allowing any sort of patents on software?
Good.
Yeah, it's just not much to. It doesn't explicitly ban them, but it definitely makes them a lot harder to enforce. And it effectively gets rid of the software patent process, which, you know, is not exactly a good thing. It's a very heavy-handed approach in a way, but it certainly kills off the patent trolls pretty quickly.
I know what I wanted to talk to you, John, because you were very outspoken about stack ranking. We're going to take a break. Some people say that the problem that Microsoft's been facing, that the reason Ballmer has got to be gone, is stack ranking. And I want you to explain what that all means. And then we have a Slate article in which an ex-Microsoft manager said it was totally demoralizing, that stack ranking made him secretive, cynical, and paranoid.
Yes.
And I'm not surprised. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, a word from Carbonite Online Backup. Nothing to be cynical about when it comes to backup. If you're not backing up, you're at risk. You're at risk of losing all your data. Hard drives die. I'm sad to say houses burned down. We just had our favorite restaurant down here. They just had a fire in the grease trap.
Oy.
Oy.
What place was this?
Central Market over here is closed.
Huh.
And I was so sad to see the owner standing across the street watching his restaurant burn, crying. It was heart-wrenching. So these things happen. And now, fortunately, I know Tony, for a fact, was backing up his data. His recipes, his supplier lists, his accounts, you need to back that stuff up. If you're a small business, a fire can do more than destroy your property. It can literally put you out of business. Would you be able to get back on your feet if all the computers and all the backups in your business were destroyed? That's why you got to have backup. Same for home users, too. Carbonite is great. It's automatic. You don't have to think about it. There's no employee who has to remember to back up. Your life is not in their hands. It's secure. All your files are encrypted and backed up safely off-site. It's affordable. Always one low, flat yearly rate for all the data you've got. It's great for a small business. It's great for a home. $59.99 a year for a single computer. They've got business plans that are very affordable. I want you to check it out. You got 2 weeks free. If you just mention TWIT, go to carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Actually, you don't even need a credit card to try it out. And once you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free just because you use the name TWIT. Carbonite, CARBONITE.com. Speaking of patent trolls, this David Friend, the guy who founded Carbonite, was sued by a patent troll, and what rarely happens, fought him and won.
Mm.
And it's a great story if you ever want to find out more about that. It's one more reason to love Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Please use the offer code TWIT. It was featured in one of the This American Life has done two stories on patent trolls, and the second one talks about the podcast patent troll, but also talks about David Friend and their decision, even though it made no economic sense, to fight the patent troll. That's how they usually work, these patent trolls. They set a price that's just below the cost of fighting them.
The cost is generally $40,000 to $50,000.
I could tell you stories.
No, you can. Yeah, but that's because somebody fought him.
I will talk to you offline because I'm not allowed to talk about this in public. But I will tell you a number that will shiver your timbers.
Well, my timbers have been shivered
it
before.
Will shiver those timbers to the very bone.
Timber bone.
Well, I'll tell you, having talked to lawyers, that the cost of defending one of these is well over $1 million. Often several times that. It's not a cheap thing to do. David, to his everlasting credit, decided to fight this patent troll, which had sued him and EMC. They had already, so many companies had already given in, but Carbonite decided not to cut a deal. He said, our lawyers said it's going to cost millions of dollars more to take this to trial, and if we lose, we're really screwed, because then not only do you pay the legal fees, but you have to pay now the licensing fees. Friend said, I was sort of like, well, because we're not in violation of their patents, why should we pay them anything? Not even a nickel. I like that. Good man. Fight the fight. Stack ranking. What is that, John?
Stack ranking is a kind of a, it depends, and you can read about this. There's a lot of papers written about
it. Was it GE? Was it General Electric? Jack Welch?
Jack Welch popularized it, but it's not his invention. He popularized it, and incidentally, after he quit, and then they screwed with him. They dropped it. The GE doesn't really use it.
They don't use it?
As far as I know, this is what I've been told. Whatever the case is, it's a form of creating a environment. This is actually, I think, SAS has it built into some of their software, so you can use it as a
make it easy
as a mechanism. It's for lazy HR. Because the way it works is that the employees rank each other and the supervisors rank each other and the employees rank the supervisors rank in these little groups.
Instead of performance reviews, everybody's kind of performance and reviewing their peers.
What it causes is a lot of brown-nosing, yes-men kind of attitudes. It really screws up a company. And what it is you get – if I'm ranking you and you're ranking me, I have to choose between and say this, say we're in a group. I have to choose one person in this group and give him a number one, and somebody else gets a two, somebody else gets a three, and somebody else gets a four. And I have to, and you have, it's forced ranking. So you have to, somebody has to be a one, which is the low number. Of course, you could reverse and make the number one the best, but it's beside the point. So in a group of, let's say, four people, it's everyone has to have these numbers given by the other employees. And if you come out with a bunch of low numbers, the ones, you're essentially fired.
You're voted off the – it's like Survivor.
Yeah, very much. And so – and generally with a stack ranking situation, 25% of your force, your team, is always going to be fired. And
oh,
you can,
Jesus.
And you can do this –
That's
on,
not good.
You can do this on a quarterly basis, twice a year in the case of Yahoo, which apparently has this implemented with Marissa, they do it monthly.
So why it seems so apparent that this is a bad idea for morale?
No, it's terrible.
Why do it?
Because it when you first if you're a takeover artist and you first get a hold of a company, if you
need to weed out the
if
bad
you
apples.
And you don't have to do any work to do it because you just showed up. You don't know these guys,
right?
So you can use it for about a year or two,
right?
And it really does trim the company down to a bunch of go-getters. But then if you continue to do it, which everyone does because it's a lazy way of evaluating people. It starts to create these problems, which are psychological. People start becoming yes men. They're worried more about their ranking than they are doing their job, and so you end up with a kind of a declining, deteriorating company with all the talent leaving because nobody with any real talent wants to stick around to be humiliated like this. So Microsoft basically lost all their people over time because they just love this stack ranking. They've been using it since I don't know
before Ballmer. So this is an article by David Auerbach. Tales of an ex-Microsoft manager. He talks about stack ranking, says, you know, to be entirely fair, stack ranking predated Ballmer, both as a cause and a symptom of the corporation's decline. He was a software developer, later development lead at Microsoft between 1998 and 2003. He had to participate in this. He says stack rank was harmful. It served as an incentive not to join high-quality groups because you'd be that much more likely to be a low-ranked member, right? But better to join a weak group where you'd be the star and then coast. So it's a great way to get the least possible out of every single employee.
If you think about it, think of about a basketball team, for example. If you, say, had the perfect team, everybody had a role, everybody knew what they were doing, and everyone played well. Generally speaking, if a team like that goes and wins a championship, and I would cite the Golden State Warriors when they won their championship in the 70s, they immediately did some trades. You got a team, and they swept. They swept the Washington Bullets four straight, and then they immediately traded people.
Right.
This is like idiotic. If you have a perfect team, and in corporations, sometimes you have a perfect little team that just kicks butt. Why would somebody come over and say, look, you got to fire one of these guys because this is our system? It's idiotic. Anyway. That's my little thing.
The sports fan in me would say they're all a year older, which means the chances are that some of them had career years and will regress to the mean, and some of them are going to be older and less good.
If
you watch the 2010 San Francisco Giants and the 2012 San Francisco Giants, what happened the next year is they kept their teams together and they
This is not an accurate analysis. They changed a lot of things on that World Series team.
He finishes the article. This sort of organizational dissembling skews your psyche. After I left Microsoft, I was left with a lingering paranoia for months, always wondering about the agendas of those around me, skeptical about what I was being told, whether it was the real story. I didn't realize until the non-stacked performance review time at my new job that I'd become so wary. Yeah. At the time, inside Microsoft, it just seemed the only logical way to be. Does not, if I mean, while that may not be the only problem at Microsoft, if they're still doing it, if Yahoo's doing it, seems like a bad idea. Seems like a bad idea.
I'm stunned. And when you, I did some essays on this, and you would get notes from these HR guys, and they tell you how great this idea was and how why it works and all the rest of it. And I couldn't, I've never understood any of the arguments. Except the one where it is a short-term fix when you just, you know, a new team comes in.
I can see that.
It's a hatchet.
Yeah.
A hatchet man comes in. He's got to do stuff now, and he doesn't know anybody. And this often would happen. This happened actually at Microsoft. There was a guy that I can't remember his name. I should remember his name. I feel bad about it. But he was one of these guys. He worked with the media. And so if you had a problem, you call him, and he would take care of everybody. And the media relations were fantastic. During a stack ranking period, out he went. Yeah.
And now you got Frank.
And we
Shaw.
Had the same thing at we had the same kind of thing happen at Apple years and years ago. There was one of these guys who was really good. He'd follow up on everything, keep everybody happy. Out, you know. It's just like
making us look bad.
Making us look bad. No, that wasn't. So this is a serious problem.
Yeah, I wonder what. I just don't. I can see why Chainsaw Al Dunlap would use it. I don't understand why. Marissa Meyer would use it.
Well, she showed up. She doesn't
she's
know anybody.
New, I guess. Yeah.
You use it in a troubled organization where you figure that problems. There are a lot of people who don't really belong there.
And she's got it accelerated, though. My contact there says who's ready to. The problem is that everyone, once this starts up, especially on her basis, she's doing it monthly. Jeez. He says, we're all got our resumes out. We're ready to bail.
Oh, yeah.
So you're not thinking about Yahoo anymore. You're thinking about getting out.
Right. I would. Hey, we're going to take a break. Let's find out if you missed anything on Twit. I think you missed quite a bit. Let's see.
Previously on Twit, This Week in Google.
Did you get your Nexus 7 LTE version yet?
No! France gets it first. What the hell's wrong here?
How dare they?
Windows Weekly.
What Steve and Elop did at Nokia is exactly what the next guy needs to do Microsoft. Walk in, assess the situation, describe how it's crashing into the ground, and then fix it. That bold step needs to happen first.
This Week in YouTube.
This is a story from Tube Filter mentioning that all the new Saturday Night Live cast members may all come from YouTube.
Okay, let's call this what it is. Saturday Night Live is desperate.
Triangulation.
A lot of people think you shouldn't end a sentence with a preposition.
Terrible rule, because it ends up with all these complicated constructions that you're doing cartwheels to try not to put a preposition of the sentence at which it will be ending to which of that.
Exactly.
Twit. Broadcasting from the capital of the free world, Petaluma, California.
Ain't that the truth, baby? You've heard that joke. Do you use prepositions at the end of the sentence, John? You're a writer. Trained professional.
Rarely.
I don't care. It's not a big deal.
Well,
you've heard that joke. We told the joke on the show.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, the mom and daughter coming to, what is it, University of California for the first time to meet the roommate. She says, where are y'all from? And the mom says, well, we're somewhere where we don't end sentences with a preposition, my dear. And she says, oh, I'm sorry. Where are y'all from, bitch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is how
that's a great joke.
It's a good joke. I'll tell that joke again.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
Lady.
Maybe again in this show.
Indians don't use saddles.
No.
What is it?
Indians ride bareback is the punchline.
Thank you. Much funnier that way.
Yeah. You either know that joke or you don't. We can do punchlines. We can.
We don't need to tell the story. Tesla is now officially a threat to the auto industry, writes GigaOhm. We had two Tesla drivers here last week. Prager drives a Tesla.
Yep.
And Ryan Block drives a Tesla. I'm surprised you don't drive a Tesla. Doesn't everybody at Revision 3?
I'm surprised you're not getting
a
Tesla.
Don't you get a Tesla if you work at Revision 3?
No, I wish.
Yeah? Aren't you getting a new car?
I'm getting a gasoline engine.
Yeah, well, what model is it?
It's the Audi A8.
Oof. Oh, the 8. Don't you think that's a little ritzy?
Yeah, it's a lot ritzy.
Have you seen the 5? The 5's a gorgeous car.
No, I want the big one.
That's a big monster, that 8.
Yeah, it's a
you
big
got
car.
The big engine in it?
Got the big engine. Got the V8.
The V8.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He's a car guy. Tim understands what I'm talking about here.
I do understand.
There's
that
nothing like
is
a gasoline
engine. Is it an RS?
The A8 is a gorgeous car.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Is there a diesel option?
There is a diesel option, but I wasn't.
No. He wants a gun around town. He's old.
I'm coming from a Mustang, a V8 Mustang. I gotta have something.
Once you get a V8, you never go back.
Never go back.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, pussies are buying electric cars.
What?
Hey.
Wow, this show turned blue in a hurry.
Woo! No, that's not blue. It's like a kitty cat. What's blue about that?
Cats are buying electric cars.
Kitty cats are buying electric cars. People like Prager.
Oh my God. Is Toonsis the driving cat now in an electric? Is that what's happening?
There are 10 car companies that Tesla now outsells in California, which is the state with the most Model S consumers. They are beating the Audi A6. They're beating the Lexus. They're beating
these are single models though.
The Mercedes E-Class, the BMW 5 Series, the Lexus GS, the 7 Series, the Porsche Panamera.
So the Panamera is a horrible car.
You don't want a four-door Porsche?
I'm sorry to say it is a really good car. Yeah, it's amazing how Tesla has come from kind of nowhere to be outselling a lot of these major popular cars. And the problem is they've got a lot of momentum on the side, and most of these manufacturers don't really have any response. BMW is the only one who's really doing anything that's even close to Tesla at this point. They've got the i3 and the i8. We should be learning more about the i8 here next week. But nobody else really has anything to compare with. They're all, you know, building evolutionary steps forward on their existing gasoline engine cars. And they're all used to, you know, having new models that are all very, very much based on previous models, sharing engines or transmissions or something like that. But they really need a clean slate design to be able to compete with what Tesla is doing these days. And only BMW at this point has shown anything that is indeed a clean slate design. And I'm curious to see whether Audi can do anything like that, or Mercedes-Benz, or any of these other luxury manufacturers that Audi is now a legitimate threat to.
They completely underestimated that the market for an electric vehicle, I think. I mean, they just thought, no.
Well, that's because
we already did this. Nobody wants this.
Because their designs were not – the Tesla design for an electric vehicle that can go 340 miles or whatever it goes.
Yeah.
It's
a luxury vehicle.
And everyone who owns one, everyone, without exception
– loves them.
Loves them.
Yep. Yeah.
Of course, they could fall apart in a year, for all you know. They could be glued together or spot welded. We don't know what happens after a year of use.
Oh, they'll be fine.
Actually,
it could be more strong than welds at this one. There are a lot of adhesives that are being used in cars. Lotus uses a lot of industrial adhesives, and GM actually uses industrial adhesives on the new Cadillac or the new Corvette. Excuse me, to hold a lot of the components together.
Didn't the Tesla break the testing machine when they tried to apply pressure to the roof? It broke the machine.
Well, I think that's a myth.
Yeah.
It's not a myth.
There's a video on YouTube. If you want to check it out, you can see the machine blow up.
It put as much pressure as, what, 3 or 4 Teslas on top of the roof?
Yeah, and 3 times the weight of the car.
And gave up. It blew the machine. So
it's the highest rated car they'd ever tested.
Ever in auto safety.
And these are the sorts of things that Tesla can do because, again, they don't have any legacy behind them. You know, it's like creating a brand new operating system versus Microsoft creating a new version of Windows that has to have all the legacy support for everything else. You know, if GM comes out with a new car, there's a lot of, you know, the frame is based on an older car. The engine has mounting points based on an older frame. Tesla just said, you know, we're going to create a completely clean slate design. We're going to put the battery pack where it belongs. We're going to put the motor between the wheels where it belongs. And there aren't really any other manufacturers, again, other than BMW, trying to do something like that. We've got Mercedes is working on the SLS. Excuse me, which is an electric version of their SLS Roadster. But again, it's basically just a conversion of their existing car. Audi's got some e-tron prototypes they're playing with, but again, they're conversions from their existing gasoline-powered cars. So they all have compromises. The Tesla Model S is largely uncompromised.
But, I mean, like, you know, how many is Tesla selling? Because
BMW, it's outselling cars in its class. Yeah,
because
it's a high-end car.
Tim, why don't you have one?
I live upstate in the Northeast, a long way away from any of Tesla's chargers. They're going to be doubling their charger network here in the next year.
Plus, it's cold, and cold weather's not good for battery life.
It does cost about 10 to 15%, and also it's an expensive car, and I am a tech journalist, so we got to remember that, too.
You could
I think now they've got the 50 to 85,000. That's where this car is.
The next one is
The next one's going to be under 50, I'm sure, right? Probably under 30.
That's 2015, and they're hoping to be around $40,000. Probably that might be after the tax credit, so it might be actually closer to 50. But if they can get something, you know, in the Audi A3 or BMW 3 Series money range, and have a car that's got a 200 to 300 mile range, and if by then the supercharger network is as broad as they say it will be, and you know they've been building that out incredibly quickly, so I have no reason to doubt that. That could be a really, really strong threat to the big money makers for these cars, which again is the BMW 3 Series, the Mercedes E-Class, and lower cost but still luxurious cars that are selling in, you know, the tens of thousands.
The other interesting feature that I suppose that they're going to implement at some point is, and they showed this, they can actually take the battery packs out and swap in a new one.
That's what you need to do. Now, that's the way to go because then you don't have to wait for it to charge.
For the cost of a fill-up, basically.
But the question, let's get back to the real important question here. So why did you get an A8?
Why are you asking me that? It's not my car. It's a company car. It's a lease. I don't know.
From this company?
Yeah.
So you've leased yourself an A8 luxury.
I am an executive at the company, yes.
How come you didn't get that little sports car? That little hot-looking sports car?
The TT?
No. Not the one.
I have a sports car.
Not the cheap one.
I wanted a car that's comfortable. I wanted a living room on wheels.
She bought a... Oh. Like a what?
A Maybach. If I could afford it, I would have bought it.
Maybach.
More than your house.
Are you want to give me a hard time? I bought a $9,000 TV, too.
You just want to talk... Is that a 4K?
No.
Wait a minute. You bought a TV at 9K and you didn't... Get a 4K?
No, it's an OLED. It's the new OLED from Samsung.
OLED.
You know what? It's gorgeous.
I'll bet it is. You keep promising to show it to me.
I will. Come over to my house.
Mm-mm.
It's right next to my bedroom.
Are we all invited? I wouldn't mind.
It doesn't sound right.
It actually, it's beautiful. The software's a little buggy. I can actually crash it at will, which is kind of interesting on a television. But the picture is astounding. On the other hand, you're going to have to spend a few $100 now to calibrate it because I don't think it comes out of the box.
Well, you got what's hair and it'll do it for free.
Robert said he'd come up and do it because he wants to review it for HD Nation. And Scott Wilkinson, our own home theater geek, is going to come up. And I'm going to have them battle over it.
This will be fun. Yeah. You should record
that. We are. It's going to be battling calibrators.
No, you got the biases wrong.
That's not flesh tone. How can you call that flesh tone?
It's too much light leaking through.
It's red. Anyway, that'll be fun. Anyway, you want to give me a hard time as a 1%er? Go right ahead.
Okay, you 1%er.
I also have a 3D printer.
That's pointless.
It makes this.
Yeah.
Could you make that in your own home?
I don't know why you'd want to. It's a bud vase.
Yeah, but I can make my own bud vases anytime. On-demand bud vases.
And custom.
Look at these other things you made.
Yeah, little twit things and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't make it. The printer bot guy came over here and showed
You'll
us.
You'll never use it.
No, you're right. But maybe Burke or John will use it.
The next time a plastic part breaks on your mower,
I can make you can another. I could print a blade.
He would have someone print it for him.
Your 3D printer guy print a part for your lawnmower guy.
So another one for you, Tim Stevens. Nissan announced Tuesday it will sell a self-driven car, an autonomous vehicle, by 2020.
And I would say if they don't by 2020, they'll probably be the last in the market to do so. You know, Audi and Toyota have both shown off prototypes. And multiple, I think we talked about this before on here, but multiple manufacturers have told me they're ready to go. They're just waiting for the buyers to want this as an option, to be willing to pay the extra, you know, $1,500 or so for the sensors in the cars to have it. But the technology's there. They're just waiting for the market to be ready for it and the laws to be ready for it, too, which is another big thing.
They say it will only cost about an additional $1,000 to make it self-driving.
I find that hard to believe.
Really, is it LiDAR? Is it really that good? Are we really able to do that now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a combination of LiDAR cameras to read road markings and signs, and of course GPS too to know roughly where the car is. But yeah, certainly the software is there. It's pretty impressive that they can do this sort of thing. You know, in limited situations, it's not the kind of thing that you could program an address in and have it pull out of your driveway and take you somewhere. But it's certainly the kind of thing that you could get on the highway, tap a button, and then kick back and open up the newspaper, or even have it drop you off at the restaurant, hit a button and have it drive up the road and find a place to park.
I
Those
love
sorts
that.
Of things it can do right now.
And if it crashes, you're not in the car, so who cares?
That's the big question, because if it does crash, if it does run somebody
park,
over,
car.
Do you get sued? Does,
if
does
a car
Nissan
crashes
sued,
in the forest and no one's driving it, are,
don't you
does
just
your
have
insurance
it circle
pay?
The block till you're done?
I think you should just keep the dog in the front seat. It's just too funny.
Or tootsies.
So wait, how well did
Or tootsies, yeah.
How did Nissan make off with the Leaf? Did that even sell what they wanted it to?
That hasn't done well. No. But that's the brilliant thing about Tesla is the people who want to buy an electric car are people who are willing to spend extra money for it. At which point they want want a car more like the Tesla.
That's a very good point.
Than the like the Leaf. So that's why they've been more successful to be a luxury
car. An economy electric car is wrong. It should be a luxury car.
So far,
right.
Well, they don't go very far. I've tested most of these cars, and you drive them, and then the crazy gas
miles.
Gauge. Yeah, and the next thing you know, you're like got white knuckles. You're going, oh, my God.
So what electric car? So, by the way, in addition to the Audi A8, I want to get an electric car so that most of the time I'll drive the electric car and the long road trips. Which one should the Volt, Chevy Volt?
Yeah, get it in red or black. Otherwise, it looks crappy.
How about Tim? What does Tim say? Or maybe the i3? Is that going to be a good one?
If you've got the money, the Model S is definitely the best. The i3 should be very interesting. It's going to be fairly pricey, around 40K. But I would say that would probably be a little bit more fun to drive than the Volt. But that's just going by BMW versus Chevy. But certainly the i3 looks pretty promising. And the i8 should be great. But again, we're talking probably Model S money or higher for that car. And that we don't know just yet. That should be announced at Frankfurt. Or all the pricing details should be announced at Frankfurt, which is actually the same time as Apple's supposed event, unfortunately, which means I won't be in Frankfurt, unfortunately.
Is it the case that the success of these high-end electric cars will promote the whole concept and the whole category, and that this is the way it needed to happen?
You bought an A8.
Yeah. Well, I'm an outlier.
Everything starts up.
I'm going to be dead.
Everything
soon.
With cars I don't care about starts up at the high end.
It's the halo effect for sure. And these are aspirational vehicles. They're pretty expensive. A lot of people can't afford the Model S, but a lot of people they see them, they recognize them. When I was doing the road test of the Model S, I had one for a week, and I would park it outside of a restaurant and come out, and there'd be four or five people standing there who would be very excited to see this car. And I've done road tests with Ferraris and other very expensive cars. And they wouldn't get nearly the reaction as the Tesla did, which was very surprising to me because it's not really that shocking looking of a car, compared to something like a Ferrari or something more exciting. But it's the aspirational effect for sure, and it's something that you can really genuinely get excited about. Whereas a Leaf is kind of hard to, it's an impressive machine for what it was at the time, but it's not really that not that exciting. Right.
I think the Leaf failed because it's goofy looking. Mm-hmm.
Well, that and that would have had a 100-mile range.
Yeah, you need more range.
And they were selling it at a loss, and it wasn't really meant to be a mass-market car. It was really more of a rolling testbed for Nissan to figure out what exactly worked, what didn't work, what kind of range loss they see in cold weather, how it worked in a crash, that kind of thing. So it was more of a testbed that they were selling and trying to get out in the market. It wasn't that they sold to just about anybody who wanted one, but ultimately it was more of a research vehicle that hopefully will be followed up on by something a bit more impressive.
Finally, Elon Musk admits, I am Iron Man. He actually decided that he was going to copy Iron Man's in-air gestural building of things. In fact, says, yes, now we are designing rocket parts with hand gestures and then immediately printing them in titanium.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the end for this guy.
We're going to all feel really bad when he builds his own rocket and flies into space and leaves us behind and says, see us, suckers.
I think it's more likely to go the Blofeld route. Get the white cat to build a mountain to try to,
No, he won't build a mountain. He'll have his own space station, and he'll look on us from above.
Just like
and then
Elysium.
Start raining Elysium. Down bombs. That's the problem.
The funny thing is John Favreau, who directed Iron Man, tweeted him saying, is it like the holographic routine that we did in the movie? And Musk tweets, yep. We saw it in the movie, and we made it real. Good idea. Oh, man. It's nice that we live in a world with people like Tony Stark and Elon Musk.
If you look at
Tony Stark is a fictional character.
There's a great channel on YouTube from a guy named Oliver Krylos. Does a lot of research in this sort of thing. O Krylos, K-R-E-Y-L-O-S. He does a lot of research into kind of next-gen interfaces and 3D interfaces and remote telepresence and that kind of thing. And he's done a lot of prototypes with this sort of thing just based on like a Kinect, basically, and a couple of 3D input devices. And he does some pretty cool stuff. So you can see that it's sort of out there in the research world, but really people haven't commercialized it. And so it'd be great if Musk could make something that we could actually see distributed and actually, starting to replace Windows and OS X and that kind of thing.
So is he like using a hologram and like an actual holographic projector? I'm just curious to know what it looks like.
Or the leap motion or what?
He's using 3D glasses most of the time to be able to see what other people are seeing. But he does like 3D sculpture with somebody who's on the other side of the other side of the world, basically, where the two of them are in a virtual space interacting
like
together, sculpting something together, something like Ghost without Whoopi and without the holding the soft music, but similar idea, yeah.
Hopefully the canned music. It'd be funny if it was just like an Oculus Rift.
He actually does use an Oculus Rift, apparently, as well as Kinect and other things.
Nice.
I don't know what this is a video of. It looks like it's a...
Looks like a bad composite.
Yeah, what's going on here?
So this is him being shot in a Kinect, but he's got some other videos where he's actually inside of the computer, quote-unquote, inside the computer, doing interactions with other people. So doing 3D models and that kind of thing inside the computer, which is pretty interesting stuff.
Wow. Oh, I need HD 3D hardware to see this.
Wow. No.
It's in 3D.
Oh, that's
just cross your eyes. It'll work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blink with one eye and then the other real fast.
Hey, Tim Stevens, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Congrats on the new job at CNET.
Thanks so much. Always an honor to be here.
Looking forward to seeing what you're doing. You can follow Tim at Tim_Stevens on Twitter. We thank you, Jason Snell, for making the trip up the coast.
Thank
not
you
jumping off
me.
The bridge along the way.
It's always. I don't go on the bridge.
Oh, you don't need to.
I'm already
here.
I have no bridges between me
awesome.
And you.
Jason is techhive.com, macworld.com, pcworld.com. Anything else you want to talk
I
about?
I want to plug theincomparable.com, which is my little podcast about sci-fi and geeky stuff, books, movies, TV, comics.
You're going to talk about that new book on The Incomparable?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. And we've got a new podcast on TechHive called Clockwise, which is a 30-minute podcast. So if you don't have a lot of time... Guaranteed 30 minutes or less, or it's free.
I can make it 30 minutes, but why?
But why? This is my niche that I'm looking for.
No, it's good. Find a niche. That's a good niche.
Short podcast.
You can listen to us in half an hour.
Four topics, half an hour.
That's good. I like it. I'll be listening. Where is that?
That's a TechHive. Okay. Called Clockwise.
Clockwise.
Cluck.
East meets West is about 30 minutes. Whenever Roger and Tom decide to just cut it off, they do. You still doing it, though, right?
Very irregularly.
Yeah, that's good. Very irregularly.
Very irregularly.
Irregularly. Because Roger's very busy producing Techzilla for Revision 3.
Yes.
Anything coming up exciting?
Lots of stuff.
What is your shirt? So you got... I'm trying to decipher it. I see the TARDIS. All right. I see a modern TARDIS.
Standing up.
So you get it? It's a TARDIS?
Yeah.
It's Bill and Ted.
Bill
Dr.
and Ted.
Who and their phone booth.
It's Bill and Ted's excellent
wow.
phone booth.
Wow, yeah, that's fantastic.
I've got the shirt with the...
don't be too whelmed.
I've got the shirt with the DeLorean crashing into the TARDIS.
Ooh, I have that too.
It's like it came out of nowhere, I think is what it's called. Yeah. Good stuff.
They call it... Does Bill and Ted do it? Is it like Dr. Woo?
Hey, man.
I'm a Dr. Woo.
This is in our booth,
just find
man.
A movie with Keanu Reeves and it's pretty much the same character.
Woo.
Yes, dude, where's my phone booth?
Woo.
That's Ashton Kutcher. Okay.
Yeah.
The remake.
Dude, where's my Jobs movie? closed? What? John C. Dvorak is, of course, a regular on the No Agenda show. I bet you're having a lot of fun lately.
Because of Syria?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You should check it out, noagendashow.com and noagendashow.com.
What's your Syria theoria? You got one?
Yeah. You want to hear it? You actually want to hear it?
Yeah. It's always fun.
The cool thing is that if you look at why is McCain and all these guys pushing all these agendas, we've got a guy in Washington that's going to check this out, but we believe they were all heavy investors in Raytheon. The stock has doubled since this began.
And what does Raytheon make?
Missiles.
The Tomahawk missile. Now, the cool thing is that the Senate and the House has voted themselves that they can make insider trades. They can do anything they want. It's totally legal. And then they had to reveal it, though. But now to get the paperwork, you have to actually go to Washington, D.C., because they won't computerize it. And you have to go into the basement of some building and then talk them out of, you know, getting a look at the paperwork. So we believe it's a – or at least I believe it's a stock market scam.
Tomahawk costs around $1.5 million each.
Yeah. And they want to shoot like 80 of them.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Yeah, well.
If you're Raytheon. NoAgendaShow.com. You can also find his other endeavors at channeldvorak.com and, of course, dvorak.org.
I'm also on a new domain with Gina Smith and Jerry Pournelle.
But you're not just writing tech stuff there. You're writing whatever the hell you
feel.
Well,
I don't know. I write about football, and everyone seems to like that. So
keep doing that. We got a new season coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel good about the Niners? Are we going to the Meadowlands in January?
I think this is the – I've done a study of coaches – and every one of them peaks within 4 years when they first hire.
Yeah.
He has to do it this year.
This year or never.
Well, or next year.
Or next year. Maybe the year after.
Could be.
But four.
It's an art, not a science.
Yeah, well, yeah. You got four.
Thank you, John. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Please watch live. We'd love it if you do. We respond to the chat room. But if you can't, we have on-demand audio and video always after the fact at the website, twit.tv, or wherever you can subscribe to podcasts. In fact, do me a favor. Subscribe, get the audio or the video, whatever you like best. That way you'll get it every week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks to our live studio audience, by the way. Great to have you. A good crowd here today. Somebody's wearing Google Glass. He's looking around. I think it's you, sir. I think it's the one with the funny glasses.
Somebody's wearing a Philadelphia Eagles visor too. Eagles, so 'tis the season.
That's the smart hat. Eagles. That's the Google
smart
Glass.
Hat.
It goes together. If you want to be here live, we'd love it if you come live. But just email us ahead of time so we can make sure there's a chair for you. Tickets at twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for being here. Another Twit.
This
is in the can. Amazing. Bye-bye. Thanks to Jason Howell for producing the show today.
And by the way, the guy in the chat room, I think the Seahawks are the team to beat. I agree with this guy.
I like their uniforms. Those tight tights. I love those. They're so attractive.
Doing the Twit, baby. Doing the Twit. All right. Doing the Twit, baby. Doing the Twit.
Given the conversation before, I just had to bring my 3D printed action figure out.
Oh, is that you?
On a 3D systems, yes. This is me on a Star Trek body, a prop from the movie.
Wow. Holding. Now, how'd they get your head in there?
It was actually just done from two pictures, which is interesting. One from the front, one from the side. And they created a 3D model from that and it stuck me on some very dashing red shirt's body here with nice pectoral muscles. And
a good cod piece, I might add.
It's only how the red shirts stay alive is they got to be toned. Otherwise, they die. Flabby red shirts do not make it to action figure.
It's my goal to have red shirts for our intern uniforms. Wouldn't that be good? Mm. And we need in some way to distinguish these guys as interns, you know, So I think they should wear a little Star Trek red shirts, and that would be a nice gift. A little parting gift.
Make sure they don't pull their parachute too late, that's all.
Right. Just go out of the airlock. We'll see you later.